Welcome to the I Am One podcast, where we chat with Postpartum Support International volunteers to discuss why and how exactly they're supporting the mental health of new families. I'm your host, Dani Giddens. I'm a perinatal mental health certified advocate, a support group leader in my community, and a staff member here at PSI. Hearing one person's story on a podcast changed the trajectory of my life. It was the catalyst to me opening up about my undiagnosed postpartum anxiety, depression, and OCD, processing my own trauma, and realizing that advocacy is my life's work. I'm joined by my co-host, Emily Jankowski-Newton.
It's me. I'm the co-host.
Director of PSI's Climb Out of the Darkness program. We've discovered that there is strength in processing trauma and empowerment in sharing stories.
So that's what we're here to do. Our guests will take us on their journey from pregnancy or adoption through their low, on to getting help and finding themselves again. And finally, how they're making a difference today. As I always say, it's the coolest club you didn't want to join because being a part of PSI means we went through something. And as a result, I've become connected to the coolest, kindest, most fun people that I would have otherwise never had the chance to meet.
One of the most important things that we've learned is that we're not alone. There's something powerful in knowing I am one of many. Whether you're already connected to the perinatal mental health world, looking for ways to support parents and families, or just want to hang out with us in your earbuds, we're so glad you tuned in.
And who knows, maybe we'll hear from you next.
On today's episode, we're sitting down with Jasmine, a pharmacist by trade and a fierce perinatal mental health advocate by heart. In the early days of the global pandemic, she chose to join PSI as a volunteer in the Peer Mentor program after being rocked by her own lived experience with infertility, postpartum anxiety, and severe postpartum depression. We'll hear about the difficulty accepting advice on medication, even as a pharmacist, as well as difficulty opening up about feelings when it felt like nobody who looked like her was speaking up. Jasmine is doing some incredible advocacy work now on social media and on her brand new podcast featuring stories from the Asian American Pacific Islander community. So pull up a chair or throw on your favorite walking shoes and enjoy this episode with Pearls of Jasmine. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the I Am One podcast are the speaker's own. Tuning into this podcast is not a replacement for therapy or any other form of professional help. Our discussions cover personal stories of perinatal mental health disorders and may feel triggering to some listeners. Your number one priority is to take care of yourself. So if you are in need of support, please reach out to the PSI helpline by calling or texting HELP to 1-800-944-4773 for help in English and in Spanish. At PSI, we want you to know you are not alone, you are not to blame, and with help, you will be well. Okay, let's get on with the podcast. Jasmine, welcome to the pod, my friend.
Thank you.
Besides our pre-recording meeting last week, it has been a hot minute since we've seen each other, hasn't it?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Has it been like 3 years?
I want to say that we go way back to early pandemic, like maybe 2020. Emily, were you in that cohort?
We need to set the scene for listeners.
Okay.
So it is early pandemic. We are in a Zoom.
It was a dark and stormy night.
It was not. It was like mid-afternoon.
Okay, whatever. I'm trying to be dramatic. We're on a podcast here.
And we were in a meeting about what? Jasmine, tell us.
We probably met on our first mentor group meeting because they set up these Zooms for just the mentors to chat.
Ding, ding, ding.
And we could kind of like bounce ideas off of each other if our peers were having some hard times, if anyone had resources to help each other out. Yeah. So that's probably where Dani and I first met was 2020. And I believe we started in June 2020.
Wow. That's impressive. I think that's correct. Yeah. We were volunteers in the peer mentor program, mentoring new parents who were having a hard time.
Yeah.
Little one-on-one peer support. So since then, we've all been busy. And I just want to say that it is an absolute pleasure to be sitting here spending an hour with you this afternoon, catching up and hearing all the exciting things that you are up to and talking about the thing that all three of us are so passionate about. And that is perinatal mental health. So thanks again for being here.
I am so honored, really. I know I've said this many times, but really, it's really cool to be here, to be conversing with you. And I know like our little group was not as big at that time, so it was nicer, more intimate to get to know each other. And it's so cool to see what you've grown to do too. Like during that time, you know, I know you got your PMHC, which is awesome.
Thank you.
And
you're on your way, I heard.
I have not told anyone, but I'll tell you guys.
I can cut that.
And that's okay. And that's okay. I don't mind. But it's in the works. I'm going to try to apply. So I just got some forms signed. I need to submit my application so I can sit for the test. And then I need to figure out when I have time to study. So yeah. Right.
Yeah, you can do it.
I'm excited.
Well, Jasmine, I think we should just jump right into it. If you don't mind, would you give all of our listeners a little bit of an introduction to who you are?
Sure. So for those of you listening, my name is Jasmine and I am a clinical pharmacist. I am a mother of one. I have a little daughter who is 4. And I am a survivor of severe postpartum depression and anxiety. I don't think the anxiety part was necessarily diagnosed, or they never flat out said that, because the depression was just so bad. It probably overshadowed everything. And anxiety is also a component of depression, one of the symptoms. But as I learn more and as I hear more, I'm like, gosh, it's very chicken and the egg. What came first? Like, it may have been the anxiety that induced the depression further. But since that really horrific experience, through that dark time, I told myself that if I make it through this, when I make it through this, you know, I feel like I have to help somebody else. Like, I have to pull another mother out of this dark hole. I don't want anyone else being in here, because it was just so awful. And I, you know, as a clinical provider myself, I felt like I got blindsided. I never thought it would happen to me. I never thought it would happen that severely to me. And so I think it just challenged all of my beliefs about mental health and made me really want to be an advocate for other mothers. And so I took to first, like, you know, a lot of writing. I do blogging. I had a travel blog to start, actually. So that's the platform I had.
Was that pre-kids, this travel blog?
That was pre-kid. Yeah, it was pre-kid.
Fancy.
Thank you. So my, you know, most people probably find me on Instagram. I'm on Pearls of Jasmine, and Pearls of Jasmine started as a travel blog, actually, with my, you know, travel pearls, which is, you know, what I would kind of write about. But, you know, after I had my baby and after I went through all that, I was like, gosh, like, you know, nothing matters anymore. Really, I don't care about anything. Even travel didn't feel enjoyable. But when I finally felt like I was getting better, writing was a very healing form of therapy for me. So I actually wrote about my experience with postpartum depression and surprisingly got all this feedback from friends and acquaintances and, you know, social media that, like, you know, people were relating and resonating. And I think the first thing I wrote that sort of went a little bit more, quote, viral was a piece about how it was very ironic as a pharmacist that I didn't want to be on antidepressants. And I was really scared to be on it. But a psychiatrist that I finally got connected to made me realize, you know, why I needed them. And I think that piece just really stuck with a lot of people. The picture I had posted with it was just this picture of me staring at my daughter. I was holding her. And I still remember that very viscerally, like, you know, just felt very empty at that moment. Like this shell. I had this like vacant look in my eyes, like, what am I doing here? And I think, I don't know what it was about that, that I think just it touched a lot of people and was shared in a lot of places. And that's kind of how I slowly started writing more about this whole experience, because it seemed like people wanted to hear more and people were relating. So that's kind of how I grew. And ever since then, I've been just sort of writing more about the mental health piece, even just the parenting piece, because I think that plays a role. As you're becoming a parent, you realize it's hard. That affects your mental health too.
You touch on a lot of topics that people resonate with, topics beyond the perinatal period.
Yeah.
I was curious, how long did it take you to decide? This is an off-script question.
That's okay.
How long before you started writing as therapy?
So I would say the whole story, like when I was kind of in the depths of it, revolved around not sleeping. So I had really bad insomnia, which I think was like also anxiety triggered, like, gosh, am I going to be able to sleep today? Am I going to fall asleep?
Oh gosh, I'm not sleeping.
I know, exactly. Like, you know, please sleep now. Like, why am I not falling asleep?
Yeah.
And I had this period of like 48 hours where I literally just did not fall asleep, even though I had the opportunity to try. And people were like, no, just do it. Just, we'll leave you alone. We'll take the baby. Don't worry. You're fine. Just go ahead and try and sleep. And I could not fall asleep. And it was like, I thought something was broken in me. Something was really, really wrong with me that I wasn't able to be fixed. And that really scared me. So when I first started writing, I think it was actually more like I would sleep journal, actually. So my doctor would say, hey, like, just write a few sentences every day about how it went and just trying to like ground myself and seeing the progress I would be making. And I actually think looking back, like that helped. Looking back, like, you know, oh, wow. Like, you know, last week, actually, I feel like maybe I am a little better than last week.
So by sleep journaling, that means you mean that you were journaling about how your sleep was going.
Yeah.
And then you kind of like waded in the water of journaling. And then you're like, you know what? I'm going to put a couple more thoughts in here. Maybe a couple more thoughts. And then
it started with that. And then I would start thinking, okay, like one of the things, you know, in depression is you kind of lose all interest in the things that you used to love.
Yeah, you do.
I've loved writing, you know, always my whole life. And my husband would be like, hey, you want to, you know, you have some downtime, baby's asleep. What do you want to do? And I would be like, I don't know. I don't feel a spark or joy to do anything. And it would actually be almost a chore, you know, in my brain, like, oh my God. What am I going to do during this nap time now? And, you know, one of those things that slowly started happening during those downtimes was, you know, I just pick up my phone and maybe write a note in my phone, type a few things out, some thoughts I've been having, good or bad. It would be like, okay, today was so crappy. Or it would be like, okay, you know, what are the things that are like weighing me down or bothering me? What am I worrying about right now? And I think even just the physical way of putting it down somewhere helped to almost like lift it away. That I didn't have to think
of offloading
it.
Yes.
Right. And so as I was healing, I think I want to say maybe around 8 to 9 months postpartum, I decided to go back to my blog. And this was kind of, I think this was kind of around maybe Thanksgiving time, where I was just feeling like, wow, I'm in such a better space now. And I'm feeling very like grateful for everything. So in spirit of like Thanksgiving, I think I just was like, I'm going to write down some of these things that happened because I feel like I don't want any other mom who's going through this silently to not seek the help, to not realize that these are red flags or to feel like shamed or like stigmatized if they have to take medications. So I kind of put that out there and it was on my blog. Honestly, I don't have a huge following. I posted it to like, you know, my friends and surprisingly got kind of a response. And even people who were moms, I just felt like, wow, I always thought you had so put together, would write to me and say, oh my gosh, I went through that. I'm better now, but I didn't even realize how bad it was also. And I think that opened doors to conversations that I feel like in my community with Asians and Asian Americans, like we don't talk about that. The whole thing we really like and enjoy to do is to save face. It's a huge thing. Like saving face, you know, you only show the good parts. And it's so ingrained, I think, in our culture that I don't know how my parents felt when they saw all this out there.
Oh.
Surprise.
Right. I mean, they knew like what I went through, but just to write it so out there.
Boldly.
Right. Yeah. Right. But the response I got was so great that I thought I have to keep writing. So I actually had so much to write that I said, okay, I'm going to have to break it down into certain parts because this is becoming like a book, like a novel. I'm like, I need to like, yeah. So I kind of like organized it a little into like different sections, kind of leading up to, you know, the depression, like why it happened, my decision to start antidepressants, the recovery process. And then like a whole maybe year and a half later, and actually it has been 4 years probably since I have been off antidepressants. Is it 4 years or three? Oh my God. I cannot remember now. Maybe three.
Well,
maybe
happy almost anniversary.
Thank you. Three years.
Whether it's three it's or four.
Three
I mean,
years.
Whatever.
Actually it's three because I was still on it when we were in, when we were mentoring, but I do remember like, getting off of it. And actually when I got off of it, even though I took so long to taper off, I had withdrawal symptoms. And so as a pharmacist, even I was like, oh, wow, like that caught me off guard. So I actually even wrote about what the experience was like getting off of antidepressants so people, you know, could have a resource to look into. And this is a real thing that happens. But once it was over that hump, it was fine. And I've never actually really had an urge to be back on it. I mean, I always told myself if things get bad again, I would restart mm-hmm. it in a heartbeat, right? Ever since then, mm-hmm. I haven't right. really felt like I've fallen backwards to that point. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
I have a question. So earlier you mentioned being able to now reflect back on the things that sort of might have been like inception points for the depression or the anxiety, whichever was the chicken or the egg. Do you have any thoughts that you wanted to share on like what you noticed or how it initially showed up?
Oh, yeah. It was pretty clear to me because my depression hit early on. And
while you were pregnant or?
No, after I delivered, I had a really good pregnancy. Actually, I was probably one of those people that you probably hate because you're like, oh, she seems to enjoy it.
You're all cute.
I mean,
happy.
I wasn't that cute because I had a lot of like pregnancy acne. Honestly, that was probably like the worst acne I've had in my life.
Why is that a
know.
Thing?
It was rude. My mom at first was like, oh, you must be having a boy because, you know, boys have opposite hormones and that's why the acne is like all showing up on your face. And I was like, oh, all right.
Oh, and girls steal your beauty. Oh, like, I, see, love, the, I love, I love the old other,
the Western uh-huh. one is that it's a girl because of that, right?
Yeah.
So, and I was like, oh, okay. And then when we found out it was a girl, she's like, oh, okay, well, you know.
It's like, you just have acne. You're like, yeah, that's kind of what
I was like,
what
I feel
I was
like a
saying.
Teenager all over again. So that part wasn't nice, but the actual pregnancy itself went pretty smooth. I do attribute that also to because I had a doula who was kind of with me the whole way. And
shout out to doulas.
They are so awesome. And actually, I feel like back then, a lot of my friends didn't know what doulas were. I mean, I didn't even know what a doula was. The only reason I had her was because mm-hmm. my sister-in-law had a baby 3 years before me and she used her. So I was like, but do what?
Oh,
what do they do?
Cool.
But they are so awesome. I wish everyone could have one. So the pregnancy, the childbirth was amazing because I really invested in that because I kind of went through a stint of infertility. It was a really long time before we got pregnant to me. Mm. It felt like, oh my God, it's not, you know, you're willing it to happen. It's just not happening. And so when I got pregnant, I was like, I need this baby to stay. I need this baby to come out healthy. I need to, you know, just do everything in my power to make sure I'm okay to like carry this baby through and support my body in the best way. And I was scared of childbirth. I'm like, this is like going to be the most painful thing in my life. So I need to do everything in my power to prepare my body for it. And so it did. It went so smoothly. And I feel like I dropped the ball on postpartum. I really just did not realize on the other side was a bigger mountain to conquer.
Mm-hmm. It's like planning a wedding and forgetting to like plan to be
right.
married to somebody, you know?
You know, like, and I think that yeah.
We That's did it. Yay.
Now is the hard part. Exactly.
And then there's forever.
You got a baby now. Deal with it, right? And
here's your baby.
There you go.
Good luck.
And that's kind of what happens, right? Once the baby comes, they give you the baby. They want to get you out in 2 days. And then it's like, good luck.
Right.
Bye. And so right after her, I thought I was doing a good job breastfeeding, but I was not.
Turns out, didn't know what I was doing. First timer.
Breastfeeding, kind of one of those things that kind of made the depression worse because things just weren't working. You know, she wasn't latching right. And then I developed mastitis 2 weeks in. So I had to be on antibiotics. And then there were just, I feel like a host of all these different problems. I started developing like hand pain. All these lactation consultants I saw would be like, hold her in like, you know, this position and just like clamp down on your boob and hold her there for like half an hour. And that's like not good for your arms if you didn't know that.
You're like, I have carpal tunnel now. So like, come on, guys.
I literally actually could not grip a pencil right now. I am stuck.
So I did develop what's called ulnar nerve damage. Like carpal tunnel's your thumb and ulnar nerve is your pinky side, like this side.
Okay.
And I think that also started to affect my sleep because the worst times would be when I would be lying down and I would feel the tingling and the numbness in my hands while I'm lying still. And I'm like thinking in my head, oh my God, is that my other arm now starting to feel you know, the tingling. Am I sensing something wrong?
This is it.
Exactly. And, I'm like, oh my God. And you start spiraling. You're like, oh, I'm never going to like, I'm never going to write again. I'm never going to like type again. I'm never going to work again. So I think those are the beginning stages of some of that anxiety and depression overtaking, almost a little bit too alarmist, almost too much, because, you know, when it starts to affect your daily life, that's when it's bad, right? That's when you need to seek help. So, you know, the tingling in my hands caused, and the anxiety started causing insomnia. I couldn't sleep. I really couldn't sleep. So one of my troubleshooting things was, I'm just going to stop breastfeeding. If I stop breastfeeding, all this is going to go away. So I stopped.
We call that healthy boundaries.
I think, like, in my head, I was like, if I just did this one thing, I would solve all my problems. You know, my hand pain might go away. You know, I wouldn't have to worry about being a human cow every 2 hours. When you're like trying to nurse one side and pump the other side and, you know, bottle feed, you don't have the time to do anything else, because by the time they're asleep, you're like, you know, pumping, you're washing, you're...
Got to sterilize everything and start all over again. Yep.
Nobody tells you that vicious cycle of like, when are you going to sleep? I don't know. And if you're the only person, like the sole source of doing all that, to me, it was a shock. And, you know, that whole spiraling thing, like, wow, this is my life now. This sucks.
Right. It's like Groundhog Day, right?
Why did I sign up for this? So yeah, when I say chicken and the egg, it's very like, you know, where did that anxiety arise? So some of it was circumstantial, you know, where did that insomnia arise? Mm-hmm. So I can't really pinpoint exactly what started first, but I know all these things contributed.
Mm. And sleep was a big factor in that.
I never realized or valued sleep more. You know, now I really think that's a huge thing in mental health. You know, postpartum, like anyone, like even kids really need their sleep. You know, it's so important. It's not, it's like eating and drinking water and breathing. Like, it's like an essential part. And I've done a lot of like research and like reading now on sleep, because I feel like I was obsessed with it for a while. Like, what went wrong? Why was this so bad for me? And I realized it's because it's a very basic and essential human function. And without it, we just can't survive. We just can't. Mm-hmm.
Was it you in our peer mentor meetings that was talking about tapping?
I did talk about tapping. Oh.
I was at least 10 years postpartum.
You're thinking.
Hang on. I'm really terrible at math. Anyway, many years postpartum. And I was like, what now? Tapping? I have insomnia too. And it was.
Did you try it? Did you like it?
Totally. 100%.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I'm into it. And the coordinator of the peer mentors at that time, Amanda, was like, oh yeah. And like, I used to do ASMR stuff. And I was like, what is that? There were all kinds of pearls of wisdom in our peer mentor group. And I was like, oh, cool.
This is why storytelling and community matters, because you pick up what's working for other people. And you're like, I'm going to write that down. Yeah. And then I'm going to try that. Maybe it works and maybe it doesn't, but like, you're going to find more tools to like put in your little personal toolbox of like, I am having a terrible day today.
Mm-hmm.
Open the toolbox. All my friends put all their best stuff in here.
Yeah. Tapping's not working. Okay. Well, I'm going to move on to the next thing.
I love that. And you know, thank you for bringing that up. I completely actually like forgot about that for a while. I haven't done it in a while, but it was very helpful during that time. And actually that was a tool I learned from therapy. So, you know, going into all this, my OB was like, you need to go see a therapist and you need to start antidepressants. And
how early on was that, Jasmine?
That was at my 6 week postpartum visit.
Wow.
I knew her for a while. We're colleagues. And she was just like, you are not yourself. I was like a hot mess. I was crying all over that visit. Yeah. And she's like, well, you're good down there. And I'm like, so what?
Like, nobody cares about down there right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Brain is not okay.
And I know actually she's like, okay, I really think you need to, you know, go see someone. And so she's like, can I talk to your husband about this? Like, he was sitting outside with the baby, and she let me like collect myself while she went out there to just have a private discussion with him. Was like, this is not going well. And she really encouraged me she put an antidepressant on file. And I was just like, you know, pharmacist mode me was like, no, it's not going to work right away. It's going to take 4 to 6 weeks. I know it's not even like probably the right dose, because you restart low, go slow, you know, and all in my head was like, it's so bad right now that this is not going to provide the relief. It's probably just going to add more anxiety that I'm wondering, is this causing this side effect? Is it causing that side effect? Is it causing me not to sleep now? And her response was, well, if you know it's going to take that long to work, you better start now. And so she had a good rebuttal, but I think like me, I was just like, no. I just stopped breastfeeding. It's going to be fine. You know, everything's going to be fine. But I stopped cold turkey. Like I stopped and
and
that was like another huge hormone shift drop.
I was going to say, how was that hormone shift? Was it great?
I think it made the depression worse, actually. It made me more anxious.
I'm sure it did.
Because then now all of a sudden we're switching to formula. And now I have to learn, why is like measuring this not coming out exactly at 6 ounces? Or like, is this sterilized enough? Is she drinking too much? Like there's a limit on a day, you know? And that caused different sort of thoughts and anxieties and problems. So, I mean, she told me early on I needed help and to see a therapist. And I just was like, I don't think therapy is going to help me. And part of that, I think, is just like how I've grown up is just like the way you're taught is like, oh, you just think your way through it. You just muster it up. You just suck it up. This is just a part of it. Everyone's been through it. So I didn't take it seriously until it was bad. Like until I was like, okay, I've hit my low, like low. And I need to do something about it now.
Okay. So we have gone all the way to your lowest low. So at that point, were you ready to start talking about how hard it was, how bad it was, and try the help that was being offered? How did that play out?
Well, you know, the whole experience or journey, like I'd been pretty honest and upfront with my husband about the bad thoughts I was having, the bad feelings I was having. And obviously he knew like I was having trouble sleeping. So he actually very early on, probably after 4 weeks, because I had to stop breastfeeding at that point, which is like, hey, just, you know what? Why don't you sleep in the bedroom by yourself? You need to just work on your sleep. I will stay with the baby in the baby room. Like we had a bed in there with her. And he's like, I'll do the night feeds and everything. And you just work on you. Like it's okay. Just take a rest. Right.
Yeah.
And then I would just be up and feel like crap. Like oh my God, I'm given all this grace and opportunity to like work on my rest and sleep. And I still can't fall asleep and like, hurry up, fall asleep before she wakes up again. And it just, to me, I felt very like, I guess I felt like a failure. Like I was like, oh my God, I'm not being a good mom. Mm. Like what kind of mom is like, you know, not there with her baby in the middle of the night. And it's just, you know, I know now that moms need their rest and that's okay. But the stories I had seen and what's been sort of ingrained in my mind before this was that to me, this wasn't an image of a good mom. And so I was struggling, right? Mm-hmm. And I told him, you know, I was pretty honest with him about these things. Even after seeing the doctor and everything, I tried to go see a therapist because, you know, my doctor's like, please just try. So I actually called and they were like, oh, well, your first appointment is 6 weeks out. And I'm like, oh my God, I can barely survive till the next day. Like, you want me to do what?
Yeah.
And I'm like, see, I knew this was baloney. Yeah. I knew this was like worthless. This wasn't worth pursuing. And they were like, okay, fine. Like, let me see what I can like squeeze in for you. And so they found me one within like, I think 2 days.
Wow.
And I almost didn't make that appointment. I just was like so down that I was like, what is this person going to do for me? And my husband's like, please just go. Mm-hmm. Like, please just go. And I remember going to that appointment, that visit, just like this older woman who, and I think she actually had some very insightful things to say, but like, you know, she'd be like, well, so I'm hearing a lot of these things of, you know, you're like a clinical pharmacist, you're very accomplished. And I'm like, okay, well, what does this have to do with anything? She's like, I think that's why you're anxious. And I'm like, okay, that's great. How am I going to sleep? Like, I need someone to help me like figure out this whole feeding thing. How am I going to sleep? And I mean, in retrospect, I understand what she was trying to do, but I'm like, it wasn't kind of the time and space for that. And
thank you. I'm flattered. I just need to fall asleep though.
I didn't do any follow-ups after that. And until like another few weeks had passed where it had been that 48-hour episode where I couldn't sleep. And then it was like my husband's birthday. And that was the day that it was like a low because I couldn't sleep, right? I wasn't able to sleep. So I felt so bad. It was his birthday. I was the one that was like given the chance to like sleep couldn't fall asleep. And here I am, just this hot mess. And I just felt so bad that I was like ruining his birthday, his day. And I was telling him, like, I don't think I deserve to be her mom. Like, I think she needs someone else, you know, that I'm just not cut out for this. And she'd be better off like without me. And he was just like, I don't know what you're saying, like all this stuff, right? And he said, you know what, can you please, like, for me, it was his birthday. He said, can you just please try the medicine, please? And he started crying. Like, I've never seen him cry in my life. And I've known him since high school. Aww. So I was literally shocked. Like, oh, this is the moment.
Like, oh, and then I was like, after I saw that,
I was like, I don't want to see this again. Like, I should, that was bad. That was a big,
where's the medicine?
Big red flags, big red flags, right? I'm like, I've broken him. Okay. That was not okay. So that was my kind of red flag that I needed to do something. So I tried the medication and like I knew it was the dose was too low. It didn't really do anything. For the next like few weeks, I felt like I was still such like in this weird haze. And it wasn't until like a few weeks into the medicine, my husband was like, I think you need to see you need to go see the psychiatrist, like a specialist. And that visit, that visit was really what I think turned the tables for me, because I felt like someone finally like really heard me, what was going on. Because when I left, she really assured me. She said, Jasmine, I am going to get you to sleep. She said, I don't know what might be the magic thing right now, but she's like, I'm going to find it and we're going to do something about that. And I think that really made me feel heard, that this was really all kind of banking on my being able to rest, that I was sort of obsessed with the idea that I couldn't even rest or fall asleep and something was wrong. And she really like got it. Mm-hmm. She understood that that was really what was really troubling me. And she said, we're going to fix it one step at a time. Like, let's start with that. Let's start with your sleep. And so I think I was finally like, okay, I'm going to just trust her. I'm just going to do what she says. And she gave me something else to try. So that's kind of the start of the healing.
Yeah.
Started with her.
It may have been easier to trust her because, I don't know, I think when I feel really heard, the sleep was an issue. And she was like, I'm on your team. Mm-hmm. We are going to work together and find the solution. I can't understate how helpful, like how easy it is to then be like, you know what? You're actually hearing me and I trust that we are on the same team.
You're on my side and you're not going to leave.
Right. And I don't think she was downplaying the severity of anything. I don't think she was also discounting my professional knowledge. She really kind of included me in the decision making. Mm-hmm. And we went through like all the things I had tried. Because it wasn't that I hadn't tried a bunch of sleep medications before that. I had actually called like my PCP and was like, I need to try like XYZ. I like laid it all out for them. I know what's there. I want to try this. I don't want to try that. You know, and so I had been given options, but like everything I had tried just didn't seem to work. Or I was just so anxious, I didn't even give it a chance. Okay. Was like, try it one day, 2 days. Nope, that's not working. Toss it out, try something else. And it may have been a part of my anxious response.
Well, I'm glad that you had a great advocate on your team to get you the help that you needed. And it sounds like the antidepressants did work.
Yeah, it eventually did work. And I think when I was there with her, she was like, oh yeah, this dose is too low. And I had already sort of like had a feeling myself. And so she's like, yeah, we got to bump that up. So she's like, yep, do this, you know, few weeks on this dose, bump it up to this dose. And there were side effects. I mean, I knew that going in that there were going to be some. A big one is stomach upset with antidepressants. So I really had to like sort of figure out when I was eating my meals. Yeah. I think that's the other thing, is I wasn't doing such a great job with my nutrition. So
what, with all the time on your hands?
I know.
You weren't meal planning? What?
I think, you know, at that point when you're so depressed, you eat and drink just to barely get by, but it's not on the forefront of your thoughts that I need to be doing this or that I want something or crave. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people could tell something was really wrong when my husband's like, well, what do you want to eat? And like, I love food. And it's like, nope, no preference, anything. You could give me cardboard and I'll eat that, you know? And he's like, you want sushi? Like, you know, I love sushi. I was like, nope, not even that. That doesn't even sound good. Like, nothing really sounded good.
He had to pick his jaw up off the floor.
That's an emergency.
Right? Yeah.
You haven't been able to have sushi for a long time.
Right.
While pregnant. And now you just don't even want it? Oh, no.
Those are big flags, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So throughout the process of getting better, when did PSI come on the scene? Did you hear about PSI later after you felt more recovered, or was it while you were recovering?
So funny, but not funny. When I was going through a hard time,
We're here for it.
That's our favorite kind of funny, not funny. So
my sister actually was trying to be very supportive. She's younger. She didn't have a kid at that time, but she was like, hey, you know, I Googled some resources and I found this one website that looks pretty good. And it happened to be PSI.
Looks kind of legit.
Yeah. And she's like, I think there's a lot of cool, like free things on there. You can try and take a look. So I remember this, but at that time I was really not in that mental space. And when she gave it to me to look at, I was just like, oh, like I have to dig through this. I have to look through all the tabs, figure out what I need. And I think when you are really depressed, a big part of it is you just don't have that energy. You don't have the concentration to be able to do tasks, right?
Low capacity.
So I think had she maybe actually looked through things and was like, try calling this number, try joining this support group.
Yes.
You know, try really specific, like just laid it out, just click this, do this. It may have been more helpful, but I think just giving me the website, I was a little bit overwhelmed. Like this is another thing for me to do that I can barely come downstairs. I can barely figure out what I'm going to eat or like clean the dishes or something. Mm-hmm. So I do remember though that she had brought that to my attention. I just at that time had no motivation, desire, energy really to like dig into that. So, but come maybe 6, 7, 8 months later, maybe longer, maybe by the end of the year, I was really in a much better space and was thinking, I really want to do some volunteer work in this area. Like I want to give back. Where can I volunteer to help other moms? And so that is when I started looking again. I think I had followed the PSI like Instagram page. And at that time they were calling for new volunteers to work with this peer mentor group. It was a new program that they were putting out. And I was like, wow, that sounds fun. That sounds interesting. Like, I think I would love to be a part of that. So I, at that point, I messaged whoever it was that said, you know, call this, you know, email this person. And then Amanda got back to me and was like, okay, well, and she said, well, technically you should be at least 1 year like recovered from wherever you are. And so when she interviewed me, I think I was almost at like, my daughter was almost a year old. So it was like almost like right before the pandemic. And she's like, well, how about maybe you can start in the next group? Like not the first group, but like the second group.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And you were in the second cohort.
I was in
with
the second
me.
Cohort.
So, yeah, that's what happened. And she's like, okay, like, you know, at this point, I did feel really ready to go ahead. And yeah, that's how I ended up with PSI and was like, you know, the trainings were great because then they were going through like, oh, these are the resources we have. And I was like, ah, I wish someone had explained this to me like better when I was, you know, in those trenches. And
I missed
I'm like,
the memo.
Oh, this sounds amazing.
Yes.
So yep, that's how I ended up here.
That's incredible.
Can I just say, I feel like a lot of us have that little piece in our narrative that's like, I wish that I had known, or like, I wish that I had Googled or had gone down into the rabbit hole of the website. But I think it's really important to acknowledge like what we were saying earlier, like what you were saying about not having the capacity or the bandwidth to do that. That's not a criticism of you for having not done that then.
Right.
Like it's not a criticism of anything other than the fact that parents are handed a baby and told good luck and that's it. Right. And now we're sleep deprived and anxious because we're supposed to be a little anxious. Like we're keeping someone alive, right?
We're open to eating cardboard. I mean,
like,
I'm kidding.
Right. I mean, we are just putting one foot in front of the other.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's survival mode.
And so anything that involves any steps beyond that isn't really reasonable to put on those new parents.
Yeah.
Period.
And, you know, I completely understand where my sister was coming from. Like that was nice of her to do that. She probably didn't know that, like, she maybe had to do an extra step.
Absolutely.
For me. And you're totally right that it's not the parents' fault. It's not the mom's fault. Okay. We're not trying to say that you should have done more. You should have looked more. You should have really, really researched more resources. I think the most we can do is to make people aware that before you go into this postpartum journey, have some backup plans. And, you know, it was mentioned to me in the visit, pre-visits and OB visits before when I was pregnant, like, oh yeah, here's a pamphlet. Like, you know, there's a possibility you could get postpartum depression. And as a clinical person, I'm like, yeah, I know. but you don't pay attention really, I think, to that.
I don't think any of us pay attention, clinical people or not.
Yeah, it feels like the fine print.
It's like, okay, I just need to get this baby healthy and out. And you just don't really think on that postpartum piece, which is why now I really try to, you know, inform and raise awareness that this postpartum period is really critical for us to make a few plans for, have some backup options, like around feeding, around sleeping. You know, if it's not working out, don't hold on so rigidly to the belief that you have to exclusive breastfeed to be a good mom. You know, that's just not doing anyone any favors.
Can you say that one more time
for the people in the back?
You do not have to exclusive breastfeed to be a good mom. And, and that's the thought that I had stuck in my head that I couldn't let go of. And being a person that's like so used to being in control, you're going to hear lots of pharmacists are very type A people. Like, we have to be. Our jobs depend on catching details and errors because it could kill someone or it could really harm a patient if we don't. So, you know, you want someone like that. But then on the flip side, there's like that double-edged sword. And motherhood was one of those things that I did not realize you really don't have much control.
Amen.
Like, going into it, you just don't know what you're going to get. It's playing like roulette. You don't know what you're going to end up with. You don't know what deck of cards you're handed. Mm-hmm. And every experience is different. Mm-hmm. So it's been a very humbling experience. And I just love everything that PSI does to, you know, destigmatize, to make it feel like it's going to be okay. And that someone really is caring out there that wants to help you. That's the thing, is that like, I feel like all of our volunteers, you know, all of these people in this community of PSI that want to help moms, they really do care. And so when I tell people like, call that line, call it. I know like it's a lot of work to do anything, but if you can just call it, somebody will help you get where you need to go. I think that's the one thing I would maybe have people take away from all of this, is that, you know, all those like hotlines and numbers and stuff, if you're in the hands of PSI, you'll be okay. I think you'll be okay. Someone's going to help you get there. I don't even work for you guys.
That one's on the house.
We're going to clip that
boom,
and use it everywhere.
I mean, this is, I don't know when this episode's going to come out, but we are in, you know, suicide prevention month. Maternal suicide is one of the leading causes of death in our moms in this country. And I just cannot emphasize, like, I'm so glad we have an easy number now, 988 to call, and that we even have like a national maternal mental health line, which I learned in my training last month. And yeah, we're going to help them get where they need to. We can't lose more moms.
Yeah.
We just can't.
Exactly. And scene. No.
I'm just taking a deep breath real quick.
Do you have anything else that you want to share about like what you're doing now to support folks?
Sure. I had to take a step back from peer mentoring, even though I loved it, but it is a 6-month commitment each time you sign on with a new peer and mentor, because you want to be that person's support for a while. And I loved doing it. But I had to stop after my first round because we were actually looking for a house at that time, but who knew the pandemic would totally ruin the real estate market and, you know, crazy upbidding and stuff. So for a while, we've been really on this like journey to search for a place. And now after we found our place, then it's like, now you got to like move in, and moving in and getting everything ready is so hard. So in that process, that meantime, I've been doing a lot of writing. I do a lot of writing on my Instagram. I started a new newsletter that's just a little bit more personal about mental health and parenting. And recently, very recently, I partnered with a therapist friend who came to me and was like, I would really love to do a podcast on mental health. And I said, yes, please let me do this with you.
Specifically for which population?
And so we decided, we're both Taiwanese American, and we really wanted to focus on Asian American Pacific Islanders in that maternal mental health space. And we are going to launch very soon. By the time this is out, it's probably going to be out, but it's called Healing the Tigress, which is kind of in reference to like the tiger mom, where, you know, we might have grown up with one. We might have been kind of shaped into being one, but maybe we want to take a step back and really think about what serves our mental health, because it is important, even though we might have been raised to think that like we have to put others first and, you know, motherhood is martyrdom. It's not. And I think that's, this community has a lot of people that don't speak out about their mental health, don't even realize they need the help, are ashamed to go get the help. And I think this podcast is really going to highlight some really great guests we have that have great stories to tell, so that moms in this community feel like they're represented, mm-hmm. and that they're not alone, that they're not the only ones failing. That's how I felt, at least when I was like searching for stories. I just felt like, am I the only one like that's sucking at this? I don't see anyone else that looks like me that's sucking at this. And
it's a very lonely feeling.
It is.
I can imagine.
But yeah. I don't think that's true. I think it's just, we're not speaking out. We're not hearing those stories, because as I was sharing mine, more and more people would come to me and say, God, that was me too. And these would be people in the Asian American community that I'm like, I wish I had known. Like, I would have felt less alone in this.
Yeah.
Okay. So if someone's listening and they identify as an Asian American Pacific Islander, then can they go sign up to maybe be a guest?
You know, we're still working on that. I think that would be great for future, that, you know, if people want to share their story, that we could, you know, invite them on to be a guest. Obviously, we're very amateur at this. We're still figuring it out.
Hey, none of us are experts yet.
None of us are experts at parenting or anything for that matter.
We have a good lineup for now for this season, I think. Maybe the next season, awesome. We might take more
sure.
guests. I have a lot of like, wish list guests that maybe someday we can get.
Who's on the list?
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's top secret information.
I did mention one today on Instagram, Jenny Wang, who does Asians for Mental Health. She has also like a book out, and she's just a really great voice in the space. Maybe not necessarily just for like maternal mental health, but just in general, like she writes a lot of things for children of immigrants. Like she always leads with that. And, the way we've grown up and the way that it has shaped us into certain actions or thoughts or ways we parent even. Mm-hmm. So I think that she's one guest. I have also Pooja Lakshman. I don't know if you guys know her. Mm-hmm. She is amazing. And I'm reading her book right now. And it's called Real Self-Care. I think Shivani might have mentioned it in her episode.
Yes.
Yeah, I heard her episode too. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yes, I have to read that book, because I've been following Dr. Lakshman for a while. And I'm like, yes, I do need to get that book in my hands. And
it's in my Audible library.
So good. It's so good. It's like, I feel like every woman, every mother needs to read it. Yeah. And she was just recently on a podcast that I'm also listening to right now. She's on the Ezra Klein podcast.
Oh. That was mentioned by Jessica
Eckoff. Yeah.
She's just dynamic. I would love to have a conversation with her about this real self-care topic within the Asian American Pacific Islander community. That's big.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, listen, I think this is a really natural time because we're hitting on a bunch of our questions to hop into the lightning round if you're ready, Jasmine.
I'm ready whenever you are.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, Jasmine, besides this podcast, do you have a podcast? It's your favorite podcast or one that's coming up that you'd like to suggest to our listeners?
Healing the Tigress is the new podcast. It's coming out soon. So if people want to listen to that, what I like to listen to, I think my default that I always go to is Dr. Becky's Good Inside.
Oh,
yeah.
Good Inside.
I've been listening to it since it started. So it's a little wonky to search for old episodes right now. I don't know what's happening with it. She's been like re-putting out old episodes. But I love her stuff. When I was going through, I think my daughter was maybe 18 months at that time. It was suddenly that phase where, you know, they suddenly start to like reject everything, say no to everything. She started throwing food. And I'm like, you've never thrown food before. What is going on? Like, you're suddenly this weird, crazy child. And I was like in distress. And one of my friends, actually, the mom that drew the tigers for our logo on our podcast.
Which are beautiful, by the way.
Yeah. She's amazing. She's so talented. It was watercolor tigers. And we want to feature like other Asian American artists. So she, you know, I thought of her. And
perfect.
She told me, she's like, oh, you got to listen to Dr. Becky, or you got to follow her. And I'm like, really? Okay.
Yep.
And she's like, all this like tantrumy stuff, like you will find like, you know, your peace with it if it triggers you this much. And that's how I started listening to her. And I was like, like I love her podcast.
Yeah. It's a good one. It's also in my
on your library
Spotify. Yeah, actually I have her book
I do too.
listen I have to that her book on too. Trip.
Yeah, it's a good book.
So, Jasmine, are you a fan of a book in your hand or a book in your ear?
Oh, in my ear? I don't do books in my ears at all. I'm book in the hand all the way.
They don't fit in there. It's so weird. I've tried. It just doesn't work.
And I can't even do like a Kindle. I've tried. My husband bought me one for my birthday and I did it for a while, but I actually read This Is Not What I Expected on my Kindle. But I felt like, I want to like highlight this. I want to like tab this. Like, and it was just too difficult on the Kindle that I'm sure there's a way to do it. Maybe I'm just like too old school.
It's not the same.
Don't say you're too old, but Emily is a fan of those like sticky note tabs and writing, aren't you?
Listen, all I'm saying is my inner student comes out to play when you put a book in my hand and there's like some highlighters and stuff around. Like, I'm like, all right, let's do this.
Same here. I need it in my hand.
We're going to reference this later for sure.
It's easier to like flip through it and be like, okay, there was a passage somewhere too. I know it's around here somewhere. So much easier to flip through it than to just swipe. And if you're listening, sometimes when you need a thought to marinate a little bit more and to just really let it sink in, I feel like seeing the words helps me just internalize it better. Mm-hmm. If I'm listening, I'm like, shoot, now I have to like rewind. Where was it again?
Oh, that's me and my walks all the time. I'm like, again, it's that marinating thing. I'm like, oh, that was profound. And then I find myself thinking about it, but the audio continues. And I'm like, son of a nutcracker.
Exactly.
Rewind. Anyway. Hey, Jasmine, what are you currently reading?
I think we kind of talked about this, but I'm reading Real Self-Care. That one's a great. Yes. It's so good. I'm probably 70% done with it, but I highly recommend it. And if anybody needs a good book about sleep, Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker, who's like a PhD in I think he went to like Harvard. He was teaching at like Harvard Medical. And he's from the UK. Like now he teaches at Berkeley. I've had friends that were like, I listened to his guest lectures before. He's amazing. But don't read it if like you're having a lot of difficulty sleeping or you're anxious about sleeping, because then you're just going to be like, oh my God, this is so important. Why am I not doing it? But to learn the real science behind it, why it's like, you know, really good for you and stuff. He really lays it out. Like, and
super interesting. Great. What is your go-to for a quick mental break?
Ooh, I actually really love the Calm app. I don't know if you guys have ever tried it, but I actually get it through my healthcare organization. They actually subsidize it. And so I will pop on for like a quick 10-minute meditation. And sometimes I'm not even like really meditating. Honestly, I'm walking as I'm doing it. You know, I'm just, but I'm listening to the thoughts and the ideas. And I really like The Daily Trip by Jeff Warren. That's on Calm, because there's a lot of stuff in Calm as well. But if I, if I need like a grounding or centering thing, and it's usually only like 10 minutes at most anyways, I'm like, I can maybe pop that in and just sort of resettle my mind a little bit.
Great. That's cool. What is your best parenting hack?
Oh my God. We just said none of us know what we're doing.
Ain't that the truth?
Best parenting
hack. Maybe that's the hack. Admitting that we don't know what we're doing.
I would say, and this is something that I was actually going to write about this in my newsletter coming up next week, a story about a moment I had with my daughter. I think if you just sort of accept that you're not going to get it right and that it's okay, because as long as you repair and go back to it, I think that does wonders. And it's funny because Dr. Becky actually just came out with this in her newest TED Talk. And she says this in like her newsletters, like permission to F up. Because if you don't F up, you cannot fix it. Mm-hmm. And that fixing part is so valuable with your kids and your relationship. Yep. So I think I think like if any parents out there are feeling like really bad that they feel like they're messing up their kids or like they didn't do it right or they weren't a good parent today, that's okay. There's always tomorrow. You can always go back to that moment you felt bad about and talk about it when you're out of that hard moment and repair that. And I think that part is so important with your kids because that's what they remember. They remember like, wow, I think they realize that we're human. We mess up, but we can go back and fix it. Yeah.
And we also realize that we're human.
Yeah.
And we get to practice realizing we don't have to be perfect.
Exactly.
Look, it wasn't that big of a deal. We repaired and our kid accepted it and we came together and we're going to try
again. Exactly. And I mean, even if the repair isn't perfect, I think the action of showing up and doing it says so much.
Yeah.
I love that one. What is one way that you will show yourself some radical love today?
Oh, so I mean, nobody can see me except you guys, but you can see I'm in my workout gear. And
it's cool.
Honestly, just I really try every week on my, this is my day off. I really try to prioritize some sort of movement or exercise. So I've scheduled our podcast recording around it. I really try not to mess with that time. Yeah. And I think holding that boundary is really important for protecting my mental health and everyone else around me. So I've already done that part today.
Yep. Yeah. Bam.
Absolutely. Are we ready?
I think we're ready. What everybody's been waiting for. Okay. Molly's favorite question.
Most critical question. No. Well, we are 70-something percent water. So how do you take your water?
How do I take
bubbles,
my water?
No bubbles.
Oh, you mean like, if is it?
From a tap, only bottled?
I like to drink filtered water. I don't like bubbles in my water.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like...
Staunchly anti-bubble. That's
yeah,
fair.
Yeah, I don't like carbonation. I don't even drink soda because it's the bubbles that I don't like, actually.
Oh, my youngest used to call that spicy water.
I was just going to say, it feels spicy. Yes. It feels spicy, even though I like
it does. All of my kids.
I like spicy food, but like the spicy water is just weird. I can't handle it. Like, and when you're in Europe, they want to offer you like sparkling water all the time, right? And I'm like, no.
Jasmine just smacks that stuff away in Europe. I'm just kidding.
You know, wine is sometimes cheaper in like Italy than water. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. Jasmine, how can folks get a hold of you if they'd like to get a hold of you? Or do you not want people to get a hold of you? Up to you.
Right.
Consent is everything. So.
Thank you for offering that out. The place I hang out the most is probably Instagram. So people can find me on Pearls of Jasmine. That's probably the easiest way. And I guess I'll sort of be hanging out on the podcast now too. So Healing the Tigress, that's another Instagram page.
Okay.
And I feel like busy this year, but in like a really good way. I feel like I'm really diving into all of these passion projects, which is so exciting.
Well, you are using your passion to do such incredible things. And I can't wait to follow the pod. I mean, I'm already following the podcast, your new podcast.
Thank you.
Emily, would you like to take us out? I'm putting you on the spot.
I like to wing it. So buckle
You're
up.
Good at it.
Again, with the seatbelt.
Safety first.
That's fair. Jasmine, thank you so much for sharing your story and for being vulnerable and for taking us especially to that darker place where I think we avoid even talking about the fact that it happened, the fact that we felt that low. So thank you for sharing your lowest low and your highest high and all of the cool stuff that you are doing now. Thank you
guys for having me. This was such a pleasure. And maybe one day I'll meet you guys at a PSI conference.
Next year, Washington, D.C.
I'm thinking about it. I really am.
Okay. See you there.
Thanks for tuning in to the I Am One podcast. Check out today's show notes where we'll drop links to all the important things that we mentioned in this episode. Please consider sharing about I Am One on social media and following and rating our show wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. It only takes a minute of your time and, well, that'll help our collective mission of bringing resources and local support to folks worldwide. From everyone here at PSI, thanks again for listening.